Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Farms, editor of Innovation Map. This week, my guest is Anwar Sadik, CEO and founder of CoreLens, a tech company that has designed a way to better detect microbial corrosion. Anwar joins the show today to discuss his entrepreneurial journey, how he's bootstrapped his company, and relocated to Houston to make the most of the energy and tech communities here. Anwar, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you, Natalie, for having me today.
Yes, well, I loved getting to know you through the awards program this year, which we're going to talk a little bit about later. But before we even dive into that and learn about CoreLytics, tell me about your background and how you made this entrepreneurial journey and it's led you to Houston, right? So tell me, just give us the highlights of your background, your career.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, absolutely. So this whole journey started from the University of Akron. And that was the time I was doing my PhD there, conducting research and alongside with, especially with corrosion and finding a technology that can detect corrosion. And we were primarily doing a lot of research based on like the mechanistic part, that how microbes involved in the industrial assets, how they're causing corrosion. So I completed my PhD at the University of Akron and with the background of chemical, biomolecular, and corrosion engineering. And during my time of the research, we did have some industrial partners that were kind of helping us to provide samples from the industry to kind of like look into what were the microbes growing in there and how it had been affected by corrosion. So during this time, we were primarily doing research, publishing papers, finding out mechanisms and so forth. And at the end of my PhD time, that's when there was a rise of interest in the entrepreneurial ecosystem for myself. My advisor, who's currently my business partner at the same time, kind of like guided me to take some classes in terms of like marketing, taking a technology to market, or how to conduct customer discovery and so forth. That's where we kind of did the local iCore program, where we did customer discovery. And we spoke to about like 30 people in the industry. And follow up to that, we also got involved with the National Science Foundation's iCore program. There's an extensive 8 weeks program where we get to travel all over the United States, talk to industrial people, and kind of like without telling them what we have been developing or what the technology we have, kind of like find out the pain points do they have in how they detect corrosion, how they monitor corrosion, and what are the things that they would love to have in the field. That's where, after doing almost 300 plus customer discovery contacts, we were able to figure out that, wow, there is a big pain point that they have in how they detect corrosion and how they mitigate it. And also, after they mitigate it, like there's another gap as well to see, did the problem go away or did this still exist? And now looking back after that, about 95% of all people we spoke to, we were like, wow, this is a big opportunity for us to make a difference in industry and to make to bring a technology that has been sitting in our lab and actually make a difference in how to improve the sustainability of industries and to improve the longevity of assets and how we can also, you know, have a big picture of reducing the carbon footprint associated with replacing corroded steel in the industries.
I think it's interesting too. I want to back up because you are an academic turned founder, which is very not uncommon, but it is unique and puts you in a different kind of category in that way. So what has been the biggest challenge for you as you kind of navigated that transition, and how have you tapped into resources to, you know, lead your company?
Oh, yes, that's a very good point. So being a scientist for a majority of my career and doing research, this entrepreneurial ecosystem was absolutely new, and every aspect of about it was kind of challenging. You know, when I was actually pitching in the beginning, it was more technical, you know, coming from a background of research and development, it was a lot technical. So we do have a lot of help in the ecosystem. So our company was founded in Ohio, Cleveland, Akron area. And that's where the ecosystem has an extensive amount of mentors and resources available for entrepreneurs to kind of like succeed in that area. And that's where we leveraged. So I realized that I need a lot of help to bring this technology to the market, and I would need every kind of help I can get. So I did leverage that. There's a lot of incubators in place in Northeast Ohio, and I did leverage all the mentorship. Kind of everyone helped me to guide how to pitch effectively, and also how to bring from the marketing side, financial side, development side, projections. Everything was pretty much taught to me by mentors in that region.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a transition. It still probably will forever be a transition, but very interesting. So tell us about starting Corelytics and the technology you developed specifically. How does it work?
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Before I go to the technology a bit, I will continue the story where I kind of stopped at that. After doing the iCORE program, we applied for the National Science Foundation's SBIR Phase 1 grant. And that kind of helped us to get the resources we need to kind of kick off Corelytics and getting the technology validated with the real world samples. So we received that in 2020. We founded the company as well in 2020. And we haven't really started our operation that time. I was still at the end of my PhD program. And once I completed the PhD program in 2021, that's when I went full-time as the CEO and one of the co-founder at Corelytics. So now I'm talking a little bit overview about the company itself, like what we do, what we are actually making a difference in. So at Corelytics, our vision and mission is that we are revolutionizing and digitizing how corrosion is detected and monitored for industrial assets. So imagine pipelines, storage tanks, and all the other metallic infrastructure, just like a human body. Just like bacteria and viruses can cause infections that weaken and damage the body. So there are microbes in industries that causes something called microbial corrosion that slowly damages steel pipelines, storage tanks, and other assets. And this problem is actually leaving $1 trillion problem, and also leaving about 1.6 gigaton of carbon footprint that is associated with replacing corroded steel in industries. So from the university, this technology was spun out. So we were able to patent it. And that's why our technology is patented, first of its kind electrochemical technology test kit that acts like an advanced medical diagnostic tool detecting these microbial infections early on, before they cause significant damage to industries. In fact, we are the only company in the world that can detect corrosion rate, well, specifically microbial corrosion rate, on-site and in near real time. We are pretty much faster than any tools that is out there today and more accurate than any current laboratory services they use to kind of like figure out the problem. And by providing actionable data, we can eliminate unplanned shutdown that can cost in millions per day for industries. And one of our goals is that we are trying to optimize the current chemicals, biocides being introduced to the environment today to kind of like mitigate the problem. We want to optimize that process. And of course, in overview, overall, we are increasing safety and efficiency for the current infrastructure out there. And as the world is shifting towards cleaner technologies and new technologies, we are de-risking the entire energy transition.
I love the comparison to like health test kits, because that is so relatable. We all know exactly what you're talking about with the health test kit. So this is just a test kit for a whole different thing. So yeah. How does it work exactly? Like, I know not everyone listening, and especially not me, have the deep knowledge of microbial corrosion in industrial settings. So be a little bit more broad than you are when you're pitching potential customers. But yeah, tell us how it works.
Oh, absolutely. So this technology is, most importantly, it's non-invasive. That means it does not have to be installed to any pipelines or any assets that they currently have. And also, it you know, to actually use it, you don't have to introduce any new techniques or new process in your current operations. So our technology is a standalone device by itself. That means it's portable, that can be taken anywhere. And so in the current operations, industries actually take out fluid samples from, let's say, their assets, from pipelines, storage tanks, and other places. Now, that we use that exact same fluid and pretty much put it in our test kit. And our test kit, by pressing a button, we can get a microbial corrosion rate on site and in near real time. So how the technology really works is that our unique way that we have designed our testing way, we have this chamber that is a dual chamber, and it is physically separated, but it is electrically connected. That means even though this is separated, it acts like the same body. So we take out the original fluid sample from asset, put it in one side of the chamber, and we filter sterilize the same sample and put it in the second chamber, removing all the microbial part of it. Now we have all the chemistry same in the both the chamber. So one chamber has pretty much no microbes, and the other chamber has whatever microbes are present. Now, our that test kit has electrodes in it that is pretty much the same metal, same alloy as the pipeline, for example. And the interaction between that sample and that electrode, we're able to capture it at electron level. That means we are pretty much reading what's going on between those two environment, and we receive data such as current. And from that current, we are able to determine the corrosion rate, the extent of the corrosion, and how much activity we are seeing inside of the assets. So that's pretty much the gist of the whole test kit we're developing. But in terms of technology, we do have some things that we want to highlight as well. For example, our technology, the electronics part of it, it is designed to be used in remote locations, and it has the capability, like a geotagging capabilities. That means as operators are taking our technology at different locations in the infrastructure, we are able to map it out for them. In that way, as they're testing, we can tell the asset owners where the corrosion is above the KPI. And once they're adding chemicals, biocides, or other inhibitors, we'll be able to tell them how that corrosion rate is changing across the infrastructure. And our software is also pretty important that, you know, it not only tells them the location, the corrosion rate, or other analytics they have to know, but we are collecting a lot of data alongside such as temperature, pressure, flow rate, the geographic locations, altitudes, and everything else that is related to corrosion. And we are implementing failure analysis or predictive analysis tools in the software that will help current asset owners to determine what sort of problem they might be facing, how to mitigate the problem effectively, and whatever they're addressing today, if nothing is done, when will be they seeing a failure and that sort of things. Pretty much incorporating AI into our software.
And incorporating AI these days is almost like you have to, right? Like it's a part of the world today. So when you think of, you know, the process you've gone through to develop your technology and then get the, you know, have the right conversations with people in the industry to flesh out this problem and solution, and as you think of the future of the company, what comes to mind when you think of the challenges either you're currently facing, you've previously faced, or you expect to face as you grow the company?
Yeah, that was a pretty good question. Thank you for that. So one of the things we have accomplished in the beginning is that during our research time, the majority of the validation is already completed because we have conducted research, we have published peer-reviewed journal papers, and we have validated a lot of the things even before we started technology. Whereas other startups, you know, they come from ideation stage, then they do the development stage, testing, and so forth. So we already completed the ideation and testing part. So when we started, all we needed was industrial real-world samples, because everything was conducted in the laboratory in control environment. Now we want to test out the system with real-world samples. And we were able to forge a partnership with some of the energy companies And they have helped us along the site in providing real world samples. We tested them out. We were able to, to the point where some of the partners we've been working with, they got so excited that we can provide something so unique, such actionable report for them to use, that some of them actually turned into early customers. And we were expecting that, but they wanted the information like yesterday. So they were like, you know, hey, why don't you use your current prototype and help us solve some of the problems we're facing today? Well, that not only helped us to generate some early revenue, but that actually validated the product market fit even before we released the technology to the market. And hence, since Q4 of 2023, we started to generate revenue. And this year, we were able to triple that contract with some older clients and some newer ones as well. And so when we started, we received a lot of grants and from the Ohio State and the federal level. And that kind of helped us to bootstrap in the development of the prototypes, the MVP, the testing, and everything else we were doing to grow the company. And since we started to make revenue, that kind of helped us along the way to further bootstrap. And so far, we were able to complete everything we can do within our reach to get the product to the market. That is why currently we are also doing a fundraising round seeking institutional investors or strategic investors which can help us to complete the development of the finalized products that we can take it to market. So one of the biggest challenges we have seen in getting some of these industrial partners into our pipeline is that these are huge companies, highly siloed from department to department. So it takes a long time for them to moving from a conversation stage to actually getting the samples or the collaborative stage. So our cycle of getting one of these partner was on average about 1 year to 15 months. So that was one of the biggest challenges that as a startup, we have to do in everything in accelerated mode, everything fast-paced. And if we're getting feedback and collaboration steps very slowly from industry, that was one of the biggest challenges, but you know we were able to overcome that. That we have clients and some existing partners, so we are working with them alongside reaching out to others to kind of have more in our pipelines.
That is a slow process. I know any startup in the energy industry, for the most part, has experienced that. So I'm sure they're listening and nodding along to that challenge. And you mentioned VC funding. At this point, you know, you, for the most part, have bootstrapped the company and really made the most out of grants and opportunities there. So can you talk a little bit about how you've done that so far without any VC funding? What kind of opportunities have you made the most of to get to, you know, revenue stage pretty quickly too?
Absolutely. Yes. No, that's a good one. So like I mentioned earlier, we started off with the National Science Foundation's SBIR phase one. And that gave us about $250,000 to get started. And we used that resources primarily to develop the prototype, to validate the prototype, and to outreach to more industrial partners. And then we being in the Northeast Ohio ecosystem, there was a lot of resources available from the state of Ohio providing grants to startups to grow the business. Moreover, like for benefit of Ohio, that you know, if startups can grow, their ecosystem grows, they'll be creating jobs, increasing the economy. And we have leveraged those resources as well. We received quite a number of grants from state of Ohio, and that kind of helped us additionally with the grant. Now we have used these funds very effectively in pretty much making sure the product seems to grow, develop, and test it, and reach out to other clients. We were able to manage that by keeping our team very small. So including myself, I have two other co-founders, who is one of them is the CTO, other one is acting as the chief scientist. And three of us pretty much made sure that we worked very hard to do what is needed to get this company further along. Once we started to generate revenue, we needed additional help. And pretty much we have hired our first employee, in fact. And that helped us to kind of got the testing and reporting done. But while we were bootstrapping along the process, we leveraged a very good resource. Those were university students. They're looking for internships, and we were able to provide them positions. And they are brilliant, smart students. You know, since they don't have any sort of like industrial experience, they kind of like struggle to get jobs in industries. So it was a great opportunity for them to work alongside startup where they're understanding how to bring a technology to market, how to grow a company, and also and the primary role they've been hired for. So every year we had almost 4 to 5 interns working along with our team. That kind of helped us to get a lot of our work done other than what we were doing as a co-founders.
Yeah, that is very smart. I know that in Houston too, there's some opportunities for university students to intern with different programs. So it is cool to see how beneficial that is for obviously startup, but also the students too. It's mutually beneficial. So I want to talk about the energy transition, which you brought up earlier. What role and, you know, potential impact does Corelytics have on energy transition, especially being able to from the data side and also from the corrosion side?
No, absolutely. That's almost my most favorite part. We are having definitely an energy transition. That is given. That is for sure. And of course, as we are bringing this new energy to be placed, to be used, there will be growth of infrastructures for them. There will be growth of manufacturing capabilities for them. And every single path they would take to get this energy transition, there would be corrosion will play a primary role as well. They will face this problem. They will, that will be hindering them in terms of their safety, their efficiency, and so forth. So at Corelytics, with our technologies, we envision that if we can tell these, technologies before they go into place to be operational, that some of the things they should use to prevent corrosion, some of the materials they can be using to avoid these corrosion-related failures. And once they're operational, that we will be providing alongside that, how to improve their efficiency and increasing safety in the operations. And we believe that with our technology, we'll be able to provide them this kind of information so they don't see a failure in the operation. Moreover, from the environmental perspective, every year there's about 1.2 gigaton of carbon footprint that is released to the environment that is associated with replacing corroded steel in pretty much general industries. So at Corelytics, we are eliminating that 1.2 gigaton of carbon footprint each year by providing accurate information about their asset integrity and providing them if their mitigation strategy is actually working or not. And by providing all this information, they would be able to extend the life of the current infrastructure. And like I mentioned earlier, as we are moving towards energy transition, we will be providing them corrosion prevention, early detection, and accurate mitigation strategies for them so that they're able to operate efficiently and provide their goals and vision as they wanted.
I think it's a great reminder that there's so much at play in the energy transition. Like, you need every tool in the toolkit to run faster, better, to really move the needle on the greater energy transition and reducing that carbon footprint. So it's kind of cool to hear about technologies like Corelytics that, you know, you might not immediately think of the environmental impact that you're having, but it's also cool that that's something that you're really passionate about too. So it comes through for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, you've talked about the origin of the company in Ohio. I know you made a big decision to move the company to Houston and invest in this both innovation ecosystem and energy ecosystem happening here. So tell me about that decision, how you've executed on that, and what all you've tapped into here.
Absolutely. No, that was actually the most strategic decision we have made, that moving our company to Houston and starting our operation here as well. That was highly beneficial for us. Well, as you know, Houston is the energy capital of the world. And for a technology that we are developing, it is the most strategic move for us to be in this ecosystem, in this city, where we can, where all the energy companies are here, all the investors in these energy spaces are here, and a lot of things are moving really fast in Houston in terms of energy transition, in terms of developing the current infrastructure and everything else. So that was the primary reason that we thought that we could do the most benefit by being in Houston. And quite honestly, it's been only a year that we moved here, but we made the most developments, the most outreach to clients in this one last year. And we also leveraged the same idea of hiring students from universities here as well. And thanks to, so we started coming to, as a membership to Greentown Labs. That's where we have our office right now. And through the Greentown Labs, we were given the opportunity to work alongside with students. And we hire students from Rice University, and they were excellent. They were talented and helped us along the path as well. And yeah, Houston, now we are here, that and we have made quite a stride here. We realized that as I was pitching in many events and other places, I found out that, you know, people were more interested, that they need this technology even more. And we were able to make strategic partnership. We were able to get more clients. And most importantly, the ecosystem here, entrepreneur ecosystem, is massive. The amount of help we have received here is if you combine our entire experience in the last 3 years, this 1 year outweighs everything else. And thanks to, of course, the Rise Alliance, their accelerator program, that helped us to get to tap into a lot of the mentors we have met today, and they have helped us tremendously in reaching out to new partners and getting to some sort of like joint development agreement with them, and that was through the whole accelerator program, and yeah, so we are also leveraging other ecosystems such as, you know, in Houston during the Mumbai Innovation Map, we were also to you know, have a very extensive marketing outreach that we were able to reach out to the entire ecosystem. It was vast that, you know, we were nominated first of all, and then we won 2 awards. That was huge, that now pretty much everyone in the ecosystem knows Corelytics because we had made such extensive development, growth, partnership in this ecosystem.
Well, it is a very unique story. I know as Houston's innovation ecosystem has grown over the years, one of the success points is attracting startups to Houston. And obviously the energy industry is a super compelling component of that. But the fact that you've made so much progress just also with the startup ecosystem.
Yeah. I also want to like to like two interesting story to my move to Houston. I apologize if I interrupted you. So it was one person who actually convinced me to move to Houston. Juliana, I'm sure you know her, and she was the one when we were going through another kind of like accelerator program through VentureWell. We met Juliana there, and she was the one who convinced me that we will have the best growth here. Juliana Garazer also told us that, you know, she was part of Greentown Labs at that point. It's like, you know, we will make the most out of our technology and our growth. So I am really thankful and appreciative to her for suggesting me to move here. And second part of the story was that I was so motivated to be here, so like headstrong, that my wife was at that time last year about 39 weeks pregnant. And I made her move alongside with the company to Houston. It wasn't, I should take the step very carefully, but she got more excited than I did because her hometown was in San Antonio, Texas. So she lived all her life in Texas. So she was much excited as I was to move here in Texas. I was like, great, everything worked out pretty well.
That is so great. I love that. And wow, your wife is such a trooper for making that move at 39 weeks pregnant. Well, you mentioned the awards, and so I wanted to talk about that as we wrap up our conversation. You won 2, which is super rare to win 2 innovation awards this year at the Houston Innovation Awards. So one of them was the Minority Founded Company, and I want to talk a little bit about that and allow you to reflect a little bit on accomplishing that and give any advice you may have for any other minority entrepreneurs.
Oh, absolutely. So as a minority founder, when I started the company and trying to leverage the ecosystem pretty much to move forward, I did not face any challenges being a minority, of course, but understanding the landscape, understanding the ecosystem, understanding how to bring this technology to the market was key. And one of the things that I found out from other business owners were that, you know, they advised me use the resources available. You know, there are a lot of resources available to help a founder to grow fast and effectively. And I did that. I leveraged every resources available to me, like I mentioned earlier, mentors, resources in terms of grants, and also talking to other founders. Being a founder for a startup is pretty a lonely journey. But the best part is that there are other people, other founders in the same place as you are. And some of them are more experienced, some of them are less experienced. But talking to other founders has shaped my journey very effectively. They provided a lot of help, advice as well along the way. Some of the things they did wrong, some of the things they did right. And as I've captured them effectively. And as a founder, since I've received an immense amount of help from other founders, I tend to provide it back to whoever reaches out to me for any sort of help. And being a minority founder, I do have other minority founders reach out to me as well, and I guided them along the path. So I mean, as a startup founder in general, the challenges we face and the help we get and the challenges we overcome, I'm very thankful that all the resources are out there, and I think it's critical for founders to understand those resources and make use of them to their maximum. So originally, I was born in Myanmar, Burma, and we are a minority tribe there and minority religion tribe as well. We are called Rohingya. And due to political problem and situation, our community was going through genocide. And we have millions of people displaced all over the world, and we were one of them as well. So I was one of the most fortunate ones to be able to, move to Bangladesh. That's where I grew up and got my education from, and got naturalized there as well, of course. And so being a person that has been misplaced in genocide, war, and so forth, overcoming these challenges and going through the whole educational route and pretty much working hard to be where I'm today. Not all community members in my community were able to get out of that struggle. So I stand as inspiration to my community that it is possible to do, to achieve, to overcome from the challenges we are facing as a community. That is the reason, that's one of my motivation along the way that, let me show them how it is to be done. And the path to success, to educational success, to a career success, how can that can be achieved? So it is an honor for me to be able to, get here today where I am, where I'm able to create more interest in other young community people who are struggling today and kind of guide them along the path. So that was an important part of my life and my inspiration as well, that today where I am. So I wanted to share that with you real quick.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that and telling us all about Paralytics. Congratulations on all of the success. Of course, on the Houston Innovation Awards, you won. And exciting to see what the future holds for Paralytics and for you here in Houston. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Natalie, for having me today here. It was a pleasure. And definitely thank you for all your questions you asked. And I loved sharing the story and looking forward to, leverage more resources in Houston and grow the business in Houston.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.